Yeah, g'day Tripod family. Well, specifically, good morning for the first time since we've co-hosted this show together. A very good morning to all of our listeners that are here live with us or potentially listening later as a podcast. We're here to recap everything finals week three. We know who's through to the grand final. It was a huge weekend of footy. Before we get to all that, Winnie, how are you feeling on this fine, beautiful Sunday morning?
Yeah, good morning, mate. We thought we'd get up bright and early and recap the NRL's done dusted for the weekend. Wrapped up last night. We saw two prelims. You know what? Actually, I'll give the first word. We've had a good weekend of results, but I'll give the first word to Winnie from the past. 2 weeks ago, Winnie said this on the recap show. Let's have a listen. Is it too early to say what grand final it's going to be? Broncos, Panthers. Panthers -3.5. Who do you like in that? It feels like there's two teams playing one level and then everyone else is playing a different level.
I mean, that Winnie guy does know a thing or two about footy, mate. And it's so true that the thing that I found most interesting about this weekend is we go all the way back to finals week one. The Broncos pumped the Storm and the Panthers pumped the Warriors. We fast forward 2 weeks and we get that same result, but the opposite team's doing the pumping. And it just matches perfectly what we've pretty much said all year on the show, that the Panthers and Broncos just seem to be a level above everyone else. And I think that's exactly what we saw this weekend. Would you agree with that?
There was a lot of pumping. It's kind of like, did we need all those weeks of footy? But and it's funny, final series, just to look back on it, I feel like basically every team can hold their head high. Like nobody was devastated. Like I look at the Raiders. To make the eight and to go out in golden point in a game, no one gave them a chance. Like, they can hold their heads high. All right, the Sharkies, you can say they're disappointed. But they did only lose by 1 point, and people had written them off a month before the finals. So, like, they're probably almost the most bitter team, but the Sharkies weren't going all the way this year. So, yeah, they could have gone one further week. You got Melbourne. Well, Melbourne got to a prelim. I know they got pumped a couple of times, but Melbourne did well with what they have to get to a prelim. The Warriors, exactly the same. The Warriors, it's a great success this year to get to a prelim. The Roosters got through to week two of the finals, only lost in the final minute. And the Knights, they got that home win and they got through. And like that, it would have been a big upset to beat New Zealand in New Zealand. So it's kind of fun. And you go through to the grand final. We won't step on the grand final too much. Of course, we'll do a deep dive and a massive preview on Wednesday. But like, if Penrith lose, no one will really heap on them. They'll say that's awesome. Four grand finals in a row, you won two. If Brisbane lose, no one's going to bag Brisbane for losing to the back-to-back-to-back premiers, and it's going to be a great season. So, I don't know. You almost want more drama where you want one or two teams that gets rattled. But it is nice to have the best two teams of the season meeting. And I just thought it was funny. We've been talking about that. Grand final's been looming for 2 weeks. And pick the line as well. It is 3.5. If people are interested, they can definitely share their opinion on who they're leaning instantly. I'll keep my powder dry there.
And I've got to admit, as we came into this final series, I really wasn't excited as I've been in previous years. Typically, you always hear, oh, it's finals now. It's a brand new competition. Anything can happen. I didn't really get that vibe this year. I just felt that from the start, those sides were going to have a little bit too much. Maybe not so much the Broncos, because I did tip Storm in round one. And then depending on who won that, I kind of favored them as the side to meet the Panthers. So Broncos, I think fair play to them. Just a quick recap of the finals. Broncos beat Storm in finals week one, 26-0. We get the Panthers beating the Warriors, 32-6. The Roosters pick up a 1-point victory over the Sharkies, 13-12. And the Knights defeat the Raiders, 30-28. Just to capture that week there, Winnie, I think looking at the team that would be most disappointed would be the Sharkies, just because they didn't win a finals game last year. They didn't win one with John Morris. And there is a concerning trend. Whereas Storm and Warriors, yeah, they were pumped, but they came back and won. Knights got a win in front of their home fans. So Raiders gave a good account of themselves. Do you agree that Sharkies would be the most disappointed team this
that's
final series?
That's how I see it. But even they, they would feel they should have won that game. They lost by the narrowest margin that you can.
Yeah, they did. And then, you go to the second week there. As we said, the Storm and Warriors didn't give the best account of themselves in week one. They both come back and get handy victories. Storm 18-13. Warriors pump the Knights 40-10, which then leads us into this week, which we will jump into in just a moment. Before we get there, I want to go to you on the best bet front and see how we went this week.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for reminding me. So We had to wait 2 weeks, but it was worth the wait. We had Melbourne stage of elimination prelims. So you didn't really have to sweat that one. We'll get into the game in a minute. So that cashes. That makes us 5 from 5 best bets during the finals. And then the mixed matchup was Warriors. The bonus mixed matchup was PNG to have more points than Storm and Warriors combined at 50-1. I wish I'd given that out. That was a surprise. PNG, that was awesome. Saturday afternoon. So physical and such a different game in Port Moresby. We were just talking about it before we went live, but not the game a lot of people were expecting. That line shot up nearly to 50, and PNG got a lot closer to their opponent than either Melbourne or New Zealand did. So getting back to the actual mixed matchup, it did get up. Was Warriors to have more tries than Melbourne? And as we know, Melbourne only put up 1 on Friday night, and the Warriors had that within 12 minutes. So that was a handy weekend from that perspective.
And with that, we can announce that regardless of what happens on grand final, if you followed our man Winnie's tips this season, including best bets and mixed matchups, you would have walked away with profit. No matter what happens next week, you will still end up with profit. So this is 9th consecutive season of turning over profit for our viewers, completely free. Not a dollar charge. Now, there's a lot of betting podcasts out there, a lot of fun ones, all that sort of stuff. There's paid services, but like, I've just got to take my hat off, man. I won't physically because we're in the morning and I haven't done my hair, but I've worked to take my hat off to you, mate, because to do this for free and to win 9 years in a row, man, I can't even win 1 week in a row when it comes to my tips. So free and consistent tips, mate. You are the top dog in that arena. And if you did listen to my tips or guidance this year, then you're probably living out of a cardboard box right now. So let's quickly move on from my horrible tips this year and go to the Panthers v Storm. Panthers get up 38-4. I'll kick us off. A 34-point winning margin here, which off the bat, you do win our head-to-head prelims challenge. I thought Storm were more of a chance. You thought Warriors were, as a difference of 4 points. I got close, but you got me there again this year. I thought Storm, like, we go to the start of this game, and it was really clear, given we'd already seen these two sides face recently at BlueBet, they had to do something different. And they tried to be super physical and aggressive, and I kind of liked that game plan. The problem was they overstepped the mark a few times, made a few errors, and before you knew it, Panthers had already scored twice in the first 10 minutes there. Where I thought Storm could still be in this, they had Welch and Grant to come off the bench, two of their best players. But, you know, you look at this game, outside of a really bad and uncharacteristic missed tackle by Isaac Tungo, the Storm didn't look that dangerous. And we're talking a spine of Meaney, who's been one of the most improved players this year, Munster, Hughes and Grant. I think for the Storm, when I look at this one, I actually don't think their spine was that bad. I think it was their non-star players that didn't step up and reach that level that they needed to allow the star players to take over, like they had in previous seasons. Like, there was players at the Storm back in the day, such as like a Tim Glasby, that played Origin even. And he wasn't that much of a special player. He just worked hard and did what he needed to. I hate singling out players. I've got a few names here. I don't really want to offer them, but I'm sure our viewers know who I'm going to say. I thought Remus Smith, Marion Sevan, Trent Liaro were probably well below their standard of what they would expect in a prelim. And that's a list that I could extend by another 6 or 7 players.
Were there any other centres that you think maybe had a few bad reads in defence, or are you a bit afraid of the fan base?
Well, here's the scary thing. Justin Olam did score their only try. So I still had him as a top performer, but I thought he played bad. And that just sums up where the Melbourne Storm were at that game. But look, put simply, to beat Penrith, we know, all the way back to 2020, you need to be at least a 9 out of 10. They completed 65%. I counted 3 tries in the first half. They missed 50 tackles. They gave away 11 combined penalties and set restarts and made 13 errors. They were so far from their best that all Penrith had to do is play their usual game. They did that, and subsequently they blew them off the park like they do every single side. How did you see this one?
Yeah, I see it. Like, it's a game of momentum, right? The pendulum swings one way, then the other. The problem is, against Penrith, it doesn't swing your way too often. You know you're not going to get many chances against Penrith, so you've got to take them. And Melbourne started well in the sense that they got a cheap try. You're right. Like, it's a whiff by Tungo, and it's a soft try that you're not expecting to get. It's a bonus try. But that was the Storm's short period where they had to take ascendancy. And at 4-all, the Storm got back on the Panthers line again and had, I think it was a battered back kick or an offload that allowed basically an easy three on two to score, and they muffed it. And then there were multiple Storm line breaks. I can think of who made the line break, and they're trying to get the ball to Munster. It was Harry Grant, wasn't it? But Cleary pinched it, which was a pretty spectacular one hand. And there was a line break down the right hand side, and they didn't get anything from it. Well, when the momentum is going your way, you have to take something from it. So the Melbourne couldn't do that. Part of it was completion rate, as you said. They were what, sub 60%. The Panthers completed like 33 of their first 34 sets, right? By the time the Panthers spilled it a couple of times late, the margin was already 20, 30 points. So they gave Melbourne really very little chance. And when Penrith, that's the other thing about momentum, it's going to swing Penrith's way. So to beat Penrith, you have to be able to absorb it. That's going to be the challenge for Brisbane next week, that they're going to be under the pump. There's going to be either Brisbane errors or repeat sets for Penrith, and Brisbane's going to have to be able to take it better than obviously what the Warriors or the Storm were able to do in this final series. So, you know, the other observation is that Penrith beat both of the common opponents, Melbourne and New Zealand, by a little bit more than the Broncos did. People can read into that whatever they like. But probably should have gone my gut instinct, which was 13 plus for Penrith here, because they destroyed Melbourne. The other point I have to make about this is I think I was right all along. I don't think Melbourne was a top four side. I think they overachieved to get there. Everyone was saying, like, at the end of the game, they lost the Bromwich brothers. They lost Carfusi. They lost Brandon Smith. It's like, yeah, it's easy to say that after we've watched them get pumped twice. But I was saying it before the final series, you know, that I didn't really think that make noise. I was saying it before the season. I was wrong because they did so well. They got into the top four. But, you know, if the Knights don't get so many injuries and stuff, the Knights probably get that spot. I don't know. I think Melbourne did so much with not a great deal. Like, I think it was a great achievement to get as high on the ladder as they did and to get to a prelim. But it was also pretty evidential that, is that a word? Evident that they weren't on anywhere near the same level as the sides that are playing next weekend.
Yeah, mate, you look at the ladder, like, you're right. They finished third this year, which I was happy about because I did think they'd still be top four, but they weren't the side I thought they'd be. So I got really lucky in that prediction, if I'm absolutely honest. I probably deserved to get it wrong. And that's just by nature of sides like the Eels, the Cowboys, and the Rabbitohs that were meant to feature in this top eight and potentially top four just really fell away towards the end of the year. Whereas the Storm just managed to get a few wins there when it mattered. So the difference of this season was just a few moments in games throughout it that really could have swung this ladder in crazy different ways. Let's have a quick word on the Storm season. So it's a side that finished third, made a preliminary final. You know, by their standards, or by my standards, I think it's a C+, a B. But by their standards, they probably feel like it's a fail, if I'm absolutely honest. That's how lofty they are and what they expect down there. I think their core playing group is still there for next season, and it's still strong. And, of course, Ryan Papenhuyzen should return in the preseason, which gives them Nick Meaney as a utility who can play center, wing, fullback, 5-8. He can play anywhere. So I do think they are in a good place next year, but my view is they need to hit the market. They went for Tarek Sims and Aaron Penne this year from the Warriors and Dragons, respectively. Neither had much impact at all, particularly when you consider the losses they had. So I do think they need to hit the market for another quality forward. And they have been trying. Like, they wanted Tino there, which, I mean, you add Tino to their pack, then I think immediately they're top four next year locked in. But I think they need a prop, a back row, and they might need to look at another center. Remus Smith and Justin Olam, they are super quality on their day and elite centers, but we didn't quite see that from them this year. So maybe a preseason they could correct that. But if I'm having much to say right now, when you know I'm at the Storm and going out for a prop, a back rower, and a center, how do you see their season and how do you see them going next year? A bit of an early prediction, or very early prediction.
No, I thought they did really well. Like, remember I said on Wednesday, it'd be cool if we just went third place playoff. Sorry. And that was so disrespectful for me to say that, like, to be already talking about the grand final in third place. But it was kind of true if it was Melbourne versus New Zealand this weekend and then we just left it for Penrith, Brisbane. Anyway, we get that big dance next week. But, you know, arguably Melbourne were the third best team. And Papenhuyzen, they probably hoped they got him back mid-season. You know, they barely got anything from him. It's good to hear that he's targeting round one next year. And look, not easy to find, game-changing. You know, they need rep level, forwards. Sometimes you just find them from within. Melbourne's developed talent before. You know, that Jack Howarth They spent a lot of money to retain him. And I look at the rest of the back row, Liero, King, Katoa, they still could have their best years ahead of them. So sometimes you get the improvement just from that natural development, but it wasn't all lined up this year. Even Harry Grant didn't look quite himself through the final series. And you know, then you start to wonder, coming off the bench, was there some other underlying issue? So they could, and Hughes as well, I thought, limped a little bit in this game, was struggling with the knee. So like, they can definitely retool, reload, and go again next year. And it's been so impressive how successful and how consistent they have been for what, like basically a full 20 years under Bellamy.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When you hit finals, a lot of it is like literally the timing of your health. Are your players fit and healthy, ready to go, rested, or are they carrying niggling injuries? That can be the difference. Had a look at some off-contract middle options for them. There's really not that much, man. Like Nathan Brown from the Roosters, Poasa Farmer-Silly from the Dolphins, Wira McGregor from the Eels. If he's still available, I'd look that way. Wouldn't go Matt Lodge with that ACL. Jordan McLean, he's been there before. That could be an option. But I think the best middle forward option for them would honestly be Luke Thompson from the Doggies. I don't think the Storm are the sort of club that would pay the big money he'd want, though. So I probably couldn't see that going ahead. And on the latter way, you said there, you think Storm are the third best. I'd agree. I'd go, now that we know who the grand final is, that will determine one and two quite obviously. But as it currently stands, one Panthers, two Broncos, three Storm, Warriors fourth, fifth I'd go Knights, sixth I'd go Roosters, seventh Raiders, eighth Sharks. Would you agree with that, or would you swap the Knights and Roosters?
I mean, like, it just depends. Like, I think the Knights actually had a higher level than the Storm. I think I said it on Wednesday. I think the Warriors would have beaten the Storm, you know, this weekend in a mythical matchup. But they're thereabouts. You can't argue. They finished third on the ladder. Give them a lot of credit because, as I said, it wasn't an ideal season for them for health. You want to have a word on? I feel like we're not that rapid. We don't probably need to go as in depth breaking down the postmortems of the losers. Yeah. But any word on Penrith? I know we'll get a great opportunity to talk about them on Wednesday, but just anything else you took away from what you saw from them on Friday?
It's just hard to say anything negative. Like, genuinely, you can't really come up with any criticism of them. They are just at such an elite level that the question doesn't become, can the Broncos beat them? The question becomes, how do they beat them? Because it's just so obvious. Someone has to come up with something pretty special, like the Storm did all the way back in 2020 in that grand final. So when I look at this Panthers side, I don't see many weaknesses. And it doesn't matter if they're against the Storm, Warriors, Broncos, any of these top sides, I struggle to come up with genuine reasons why I can tip the opposition. Why I said the Storm could be a chance here was literally just based on their reputation and the fact there hadn't been an upset this year in the finals. But I didn't believe that in my heart because this Panthers side is just so good. It's insane. Let's move on to the Broncos and Warriors. Suncorp Stadium. Brisbane, you were there last night. I'm guessing that city was pumping, mate, because the AFL final was just before and they won that one as well, didn't they?
That's right. I was in Brisbane. I didn't end up with a ticket to either game, but I was happy to just be bunkered down and watching it all. There's even a music festival last night. So Brisbane was pumping and both Brisbane teams did get to the grand final. In both cases, in AFL and NRL, we got 1v2. So it's very exciting for next weekend. I'll let you have the first word on this game, though. I mean, I was very happy. Obviously, the Warriors getting out early and scoring, you know, that DWZ double and an intercept in the 12th minute secured the mixed matchup. I thought we really had game on there, but Brisbane just went, it actually woke Brisbane up. I said during the game, the worst thing Warriors could have done this game was score those early tries because now Brisbane's not mucking around at all.
Yeah, it was Broncos v. Warriors. Broncos got up 42-12, and there is no better way to cash a mixed matchup than an intercept runaway try. You're right. Straight off the bat, in this one, I put my money where my mouth is. I didn't put it forward as an official tip on the podcast, but Winnie can verify this. I did say on the preview show that based on recent results and the fact that the Broncos beat them in New Zealand, missing a lot of their stars, I didn't give the Warriors too much of a chance here. I messaged Winnie before and said, mate, we've got to jump on Broncos -29.5 at the line at $6.50. It's a bold bet, but the ticket cashes only just. Now, I will say that we were extremely lucky in that, but if you're a Warriors fan, you probably feel extremely unlucky based on some of those referee calls and decisions. Some really tough calls by the ref, but some even tougher calls that were just missed entirely. Everyone knows when they're going to say next. It's the Reece Walsh forward pass. All I can say on that is no wonder they are sending the Broncos to Las Vegas next year. The NFL fans are going to love those passes by Walshy. But in all seriousness, really, really bad to miss that in such an important game. For what it's worth, the Warriors coach, Andrew Webster, post-game said, doesn't matter. We've got to be bad enough to respond and react based on what we do and not what decisions the referee makes around us. And I thought that was a really mature answer by him. Looking at this one, in the end, the Broncos had 11 line breaks from 48 tackles. Now, please someone correct me if I'm wrong here whilst we're live, but from me covering the sport this year, that is the highest line to tackle break ratio I've seen across the 2023 season. So I'm sure that whilst the calls were tough on the Warriors, they have to be bitterly disappointed in that. Almost a 1 in 5. If you made a tackle break, you were breaking the line completely. It also felt the Broncos were suffocating them with their defense. And when I looked at that stat, I got surprised here. I'll go one second. I'm literally shocked. The set difference was an average of 3 meters in the Broncos' favor. It just felt like they were suffocating them a little bit more, I thought, watching it live. The other area for the Broncos, which has to have them excited looking forward to next week, is the offload count. That was at 23. Again, I believe that's the highest of anyone in 2023 this year. And when we look forward to next week, ever so slightly, how do you beat the Panthers? You want to get them off rhythm. You've got to come up with different ways. Offloading is a great way to do that. Ultimately, I think in this one, the Warriors can look back and think, look, we've gone to a grand final qualifier in a season where last year we were second last. We need to be proud of this. Off the field, we've captivated our entire country and the wider rugby league audience with funny little songs and catchphrases like up the wars. So I think the Warriors need to be genuinely proud of this, and they do have a solid base to build on for next year. And for the Broncos, my final thoughts here, Winnie, is I think they've shown me enough in this game and throughout this final series that they can compete with the Panthers next week. It's the first time in a long time in a finals game against the Panthers where I'm genuinely thinking they could be beaten. But I'll have to have a little bit more of a deep dive before I can say for sure. How did you see this game between the Broncos and Warriors?
Yeah, when you watch Penrith play, you go, like recently, they're unbeatable. No one can beat them. But when you watch Brisbane play in these finals, you have the same thought. So yeah. Penrith aren't unbeatable because Brisbane can. Brisbane's actually at that. And we've seen Brisbane actually do it this season. I know Penrith's come a lot way since then. I think you're dead right about the offloads. I was watching last night going, wow, like they were fearless. And when you get in front by that margin, it's comfortable. It's easier to have a bit of fun and throw it around. They were just on a vibe. But I was saying they're going to need to bring this into next week. You know, that, I absolutely agree that that's a key to combat the physicality of the Panthers and in the yardage battle. If you can generate some extra tackles, basically, and pull some middles in and then maybe shift the ball out wide on the back of offloads, that could be an avenue for some opportunities for Brisbane next week. But as for the Warriors, a few things. And I will talk about calls because I feel like they did get royally stitched up. I mean, at least if you're in New Zealand, you're watching the game, you saw some of the best highlights early when it was only like 10:30 local time. It kind of got worse and worse as the night went along, and maybe you could just at some point go to bed. Phenomenal season for New Zealand, right? And you just want to get yourself in a prelim so you can be a chance. And early, the Warriors got first blood and had that patented right edge move where Johnson digs into the line and they got Herbie interested. And out the back, and Chance lays it on to DWZ, and he must have had near 25 tries this year, including finals. So he puts him in front. Broncos strike right back. But, you know, straight away, Johnson wasn't kicking for goal. I can't agree with that. Like, the calf injury was on the other leg. He was still kicking off. He was still taking dropouts. He was still kicking in play. And Pompey missed all three of the Warriors' first half conversions. So it was only 4 tries to 3. Adam Reynolds drilled them all. I know they weren't all out wide like Pompey's were, but Reynolds drilled a couple from out wide. Like, that's a big difference there. You know, you'd like that score to be 22-16, but it was 24-12. So it was already a bit of a gulf there. So I can't explain that one, really. Like, I could get it. Johnson go, oh, mate, you've been doing well. I believe in you. But, like, he would have been the better option. So that's a little mistake by New Zealand. Brisbane, it did feel like they knew, all right, no mucking around here. And while their defense was a bit off and Kevy gave him a spray at halftime, despite being up 12, the attack was just ridiculous. And it centers around Walsh. But the speed that he can hit the ball at, and I think what I really notice is, his ability to play the perfect pass, not necessarily always because he threw the intercept, but he can throw a pass on a dime while he is moving at such speed. And maybe that's something people can't appreciate. Like, some of the passes he throws are skillful enough under any conditions, if you're just jogging, to put it, and the timing. But he does it while he's at, like, top speed. And his top speed's, like, higher than just about anybody else's top speed. So it's terrifying for defenses. You could see a couple of times where he swept around and he started to accelerate to the line. And you just basically, like, if he gets the ball, he's going through the smallest gap because of his speed. So that was thrilling to watch. He definitely redeemed himself for the early era. And Brisbane wins it by 30, right? And Brisbane looked ultra impressive. They got Carrigan off early. They got an early mark for Reynolds, and they did ultimately rest Walsh as well. So it's a successful night for Brisbane, and we should say that for Penrith too. Like, Luai got through the game, didn't have to do a great deal. You know, took some runs, test himself out. You know he's going to be there next week. The jury's still out how much he's struggling with the shoulder, but he got through. Everybody got through for both sides. You love to see it. Once Penrith had won, I really did want Brisbane to win to give us this awesome grand final. No one's going to have to worry about the judiciary as far as I know either, right? So we get, like, both sides come in at full strength, which is awesome. As for this game, though, the Warriors did get stitched up. And you can let us know in the comments. I mean, there's a forward pass call in the first half for an Egan dummy half pass to Jazz Tavanga, which wasn't forward. Like, it's flat at best. I know he kind of double pumped, but you're pulling that up when no one's even calling for it. Like, that's brutal on the Warriors. They had made a couple of errors early in sets before that, and that just put them right under the pump there. And then you're not calling the forward pass on Walsh, which is shocking. And I know that they said, oh, Walsh is so fast that the touchy just couldn't keep up. It was so blatant. And I'm just going to go back to something. I've only said it for the last 9 years. Why can't the bunker rule on a forward pass? It's this most stupid thing. Oh, because camera angles can be deceptive. Oh, because a ball could float forward but be thrown back. But how come I can look at that replay and go, oh, that was 3 meters forward? So can you. So can 20 million other people. So how come we all know it was so wrong, but what? We're not allowed to use a replay? Like, what if they just had a rule that said, oh, the bunker can't rule on knock-ons because the camera angle could be deceiving? Like, would we accept that? It's just as dumb. It makes no sense. And I've said it for so long. So maybe we get some good out of that. Maybe next year they say the bunker, look, if it's touch and go, the bunker won't overrule. But if you want to challenge it, or if a try is scored and there's a questionable pass, the bunker can actually look. Because it's so dumb when the bunker's checking a try and they can check every aspect of it, but then a pass could be thrown 3 meters forward and the bunker has to just pretend they didn't see it because they can't rule on that. So that was ridiculous. I guess the other one that's going to sting Warriors fans is probably that they got a sin bin for, was it Staggs? Yeah, being taken out on a kick chase in behind. But Staggs also grabbed Pompey early. We saw that in the grand final. Cooper Cronk grabbed one of the Raiders forwards early. Might have been Papali'i, and got a sin bin. So you're getting the wrong end of the stick on both occasions there for the Warriors. So I do feel for him because it would have been closer. And I feel like I was a little bit more right that the Warriors had more to offer this weekend than Melbourne, for example. But I guess it doesn't really matter. It would absolutely sting if this margin only ended up being one or two tries, but it's five tries. So that was my disappointment in refereeing. You just hope that they get it right next weekend when you know the game is going to be a lot closer.
Fingers crossed. And yeah, you're right, because it's hard to get a true read on the Warriors in this because of so many bad calls. Like, how much did that contribute to this end scoreline? Because it is easy to go, well, it was a 30-point victory. Who cares that the referee stuffed up? But it's the little momentum shifts. And as you said, the pendulum swinging and how it can influence an 80-minute game can be massive sometimes. On the forward passes, my two suggestions. Number one, if the bunker can rule on a captain's challenge where we're watching in like slow motion someone touch a ball, just nip their fingertips, and the bunker can suddenly tell, we can see it's traveled backwards. So you can tell that something that's nipped a fingertip that goes backwards, but you can't tell that a pull that has blatantly gone forward. Like, doesn't make sense. So for me, the rule just needs to be a forward pass is a bloody forward pass. None of this, oh, it was backwards out the hands crap. If it goes forward, it's a forward pass. Just literally make it that simple. A blanket rule. It doesn't matter if you pass it backwards out of your hands. If the ball travels forward, you have committed a forward pass. And I think that takes everything out of this equation.
I actually have to push back. This comes up every time. Alex used to say the exact same thing for years. He used to say that to me. But there's videos you can actually watch on YouTube with the physics of it, that if you're running really fast forwards and you throw something backwards, it still travels forward, like, you know, the concept of throwing something out of a car window, right? It doesn't go straight. It, like, travels with the inertia or momentum, I suppose. So I don't think you can do that. But, yeah, the stupid explanation that we can't use video replay because it can be deceiving because of the angle or whatever. Yeah, but the touchy, as we know, is not always dead in line. Neither is the ref. But they've got a tough angle as well. We see it every week when we watch it on TV. We know. And then the commentators can often say, like, look, some of them are line ball and we don't want to put the game under a magnifying glass and become NFL where every play needs to get examined. I'm not saying that, but we judge so many other aspects. It's really important. And you can tell absolutely clearly, and 100 people in a room can agree with some of these are right or wrong. And we handcuff ourselves and don't use the technology that's available. So it's just, it is ludicrous. And Warriors fans would be rightfully burning about that.
Absolutely. We don't have all the answers. No one has all the answers for this, but we do want to see your guys' comments roll through. What do you guys think the NRL should do to address the forward passes that they have missed, most notably in this game? And whilst you do that, we will go into the Warriors season for a quick word. Look, I think looking back at 2022 and where they are at now, they can legitimately only be proud. You couldn't really say a negative from going from second last all the way to a grand final qualifier. 2024 for me does loom as an indicator as to whether they are genuinely the most improved side in this competition, or perhaps they overachieved in 2023 because they didn't seem to have the toughest draw, particularly towards the end of the year. Now, I'm not prepared to make any call just yet on where the Warriors might be next year. There's still so much to happen until then. But I will say there are instances like the Cowboys in 2022 to this year where sides do overachieve that one year and suddenly get brought back a little bit to the pack the following year. Back to this year, though, I only have positives to say. They made a bunch of signings and all of them had good impact. Like, they didn't really have a bad signing this year. Even Tamedi Martin, who missed a bunch of games, was still a great signing in the end. Shaun Johnson found his best form again and should win the Dally M medal next week. They have depth around their
tomorrow
spine
night,
position.
Right?
Is it tomorrow night?
Oh, is it? Sorry, I could be wrong. Typically, you see Monday nights, but they may have moved it.
Yeah, fingers crossed it is. I'm really excited for that. As long as they don't do the split nights again, the two-night thing was really, really bad. Shaun Johnson found his best form. Dally M medal, whether it's tomorrow night or next week. We both have him locked in for that, I believe. And they have depth around their spine. Like, Luke Metcalf is an option at fullback and 5/8. And generally as well, I believe their New South Wales Cup side made the prelim as well and was knocked out. So they got depth there. They got the right signings. And potentially another preseason building all of these connections could be the catalyst to take them up to that Broncos and Panthers level where they need to get to. A word from you on the Warriors season, please.
Unbelievable season. The only negative thing I can say about them is I tipped 3 really long shot odds bets preseason on the Knights, and the Knights came second in all those markets, most improved ladder handicap and best of a bad bunch to the Warriors. So they foiled all my great value preseason tips because they had a charmed season and they were unreal. The challenge is going to be backing that up next year. What's in their favor is they keep basically the core of the squad together. It'll be Webster's second year, and they've clearly got an amazing culture, and they've seen how excited and passionate the fan base gets behind them when they're playing well. So you'd love to think that they can harness that and build on it for next season. You know, like, so many, the reason I kind of wrote them off, like, again, they had Reece Walsh and they released him early from his contract for compassionate grounds, because I believe his daughter was in Brisbane, right? He wanted to move home. Like, imagine if they didn't release him or they put a clause, oh, yeah, but you can't play against us or something like that. Like, it's pretty harsh that Walsh ends up being the one that's tearing him apart in a prelim. But in saying that, CNK did such a great job. It wasn't a massive downgrade. And that's giving a huge compliment to CNK. I look at this team, like, how could they get better? I mean, maybe like one more strike outside back. Like, I'd love to see like a Joey Manu, someone like that on this team.
I think you're forgetting who they've signed next year. Roger Tuivasa-Sheck's going to play centers for them.
Oh, well, again, that's awesome. I'm skeptical about, like, sometimes players just don't have that same explosivity, like that same pop. You know, if he comes back and he's the RTS of a couple of years ago, that's unreal. I still think, like, Yeah, like you could sign Joey Manu and play him six or something. Like, because I think 1, 7, 9 are players that can take you to a grand final. They've shown that. And even the forward pack, like Toho Harris had one of his best years. Fanua Blakes was just about as good as any prop. So you couldn't find many deficiencies in their team, you know. And look, Metcalf had a great year. He'll come back. And Tamari Martin also injury disrupted. So I don't have to come up with a lot of reasons where the Warriors get better. It's more, you're right, we've seen these Cinderella runs from teams and nothing is guaranteed the next year. And you don't sneak under the radar the following year. Everyone's up for it. Everyone knows what to expect when they play you. So sometimes some wins are harder to come by. So it will be a big challenge. But they've got the DNA there. And it's awesome to see. I feel like the competition's more exciting when the Warriors are going good.
That will be honestly be the biggest challenge for the Warriors next year. Every single young outside back is going to be thinking, or any back line, we're coming up against RTS, a former Dally M medal and All Black here. We've got to be at our best. And more widely, the side is going to be knowing we're up against the top four side last year. We've got to give a good account of ourselves here. And you do see sides, like I'll give my side, the Titans, for example. We play better against sides like the Panthers than we do like the Seagulls, someone who's like a middle tier compared to a top tier, just from that mental shift in mental against a tougher side. And that's the challenge the Warriors have next year. But for what it's worth, man, if I have to give an early prediction now, I'd lock them into the top eight, I think. Still a lot to happen until then, but this is a side that under Andrew Webster look to be headed in a really, really positive direction and have a key signing in RTS next year. But that will go ahead and wrap up our show. That is our NRL 2023 preliminary final recap. Hopefully you had a great weekend on the punt. Fingers crossed your tickets are cashed, like my beautiful Broncos bet did. New king of best bets right here, baby. But no, thank you very much for watching our show, whether it's here live with us on this Sunday morning or afterwards as a podcast. We appreciate you all the same. And of course, we will be back Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. for our biggest show of the year, a massive grand final preview. And we can't wait to see you there. So thank you very much.
Yeah, unreal grand final coming up. Can't wait for Wednesday. But hey, it's only Sunday morning. So enjoy the rest of your weekend, guys. And then your week next week. And we'll be back to chat Wednesday. Have a good one, guys. And Lego.